The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, meteorologist Tom Hale, this is Red Eye Radio.
Welcome back to our continuous coverage of Tropical Storm Florence. Once a hurricane, now just a real big pain, producing a tremendous amount of rain. Ryman Simon here. Bottom line is, it's no joke out here. We've got tremendous potential record-breaking all-time rain and flooding going on. And we saw that. We saw that very recently. I've got Steve Lenore here. Steve, keeping track of the records. And
yes, Tom. And in fact, Swansboro, North Carolina now reporting all-time tropical cyclone rainfall record for the state, a little over 30 inches. That beats the old record by 6 inches. Now, if you're with us last night, we had some reports of amounts that were higher than that. Those reports were not quality controlled, and they've been revised. But 30 inches apparently now is the new record up to this point. Still raining, so it may go higher for a tropical cyclone event.
Well, and here's an interesting thing. The nation watched, and our hearts wrenched when we saw the folks in New Bern, North Carolina. And we've got with us, we're fortunate to have with us, Lieutenant David Daniels. Lieutenant David Daniels, tell me, how are you doing?
Well, good morning. We're doing okay. We've been, our staff have been working tirelessly since Wednesday, and are doing great things for the city, and we're doing best we can with the conditions we have.
Wow. You know, I sat here, and from a different position, I'm in a dry studio, and I'm watching the water and the winds coming offshore before it makes landfall 2 days ago, and just thinking this has got to be backing and piling up water back up the noose, and then the next thing I started seeing is reports about flooding and the water coming up. How was that for you guys? How long did that take from the moment you recognized the water is really making its rise to when it was overwhelming?
Well, fortunately, with the hurricane, there was the meteorologists were telling us that the water was going to come. So as a city, we kind of had an idea of what to expect and made some did some planning to prepare for it. Obviously, you can't ever be completely prepared until you get there and you deal with the things that you could. In terms of the flooding, it did come fairly rapid, but our personnel handled it exceptionally well.
Yeah, were there stranded motorists that you know were unaware of this?
I can't recall any stranded motorists. Most of our most of the weather came in, and everybody knew that there was a hurricane coming. But there were some folks who did not evacuate their homes, and those were the ones that got stranded.
You know, is there anyone in your community now that is still stuck in their homes, or is everybody out? And the water clearly, obviously, has receded to regular river levels. Other than the rain.
Yeah, the levels haven't gone completely down. We still have standing water in some of our low-lying areas. Our crews have done all of the rescues that we know about. There's still some residences that we haven't heard from that we're checking to make sure that they're safe. And until everyone is accounted for or we know that there's not any danger, those crews will continue to do the sweeps of those communities where the water is standing.
Do you have a number for the unaccounted at the moment?
No, we don't. And some of them we're not even sure if they're not unaccounted for. It's just folks that may have evacuated and didn't tell anyone. So we have homes that are just are submerged with water that we're having to check to make sure that no one's there and moving on to the next one.
You're still going through that process right now, checking homes, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Lieutenant, this is Steve Ledard, the other meteorologist here tonight. And again, I want to thank you for joining us. I do have a question. I'm kind of curious, and this hopefully will be a blessing to our listeners, too, to know this. How does the training that the police and the other law enforcement agencies that are, give their personnel, how does that factor into a situation like this?
Well, our officers, as well as the search and rescue teams, are very professional in what they do. They we go through tremendous amounts of training every year, and are diligent in making sure that we're as proficient as we can with all of our activities. And, you know, we take it very serious because it's so important that we do things professionally, not only to protect the citizens, but also to protect our staff to make sure that they're safe and can go back to their families once this is all said and done.
Are there any specific protocols that go into effect when you knew the hurricane was coming? Was there anything that, beyond, of course, getting sandbags ready and things like that, that was done from a law enforcement perspective? How do you deal with people that, that want to make trouble?
Well, fortunately, New Bern's a good community. We don't have a whole lot of folks that are wanting to make trouble. A key point on all of this is just education. We want to educate the community on what to expect and what types of responses that they will see, and hopefully allow them to work with us to make the community better in light of all the flooding and everything that comes from a hurricane.
Okay, sir, and I have one final question for you. Last night on our show, we had someone call in and wanted to know what kind of shape the Tryon Palace was in. I know that's a big tourist attraction and really a famous historic building there that the British apparently once housed their governors in that. How did it fare in the flood?
The Tryon Palace has been here for a long time. It had some, there's some minor damage there, but they're going to be able to repair it and move on and keep being the historical landmark that it's been for so long for us.
So it's in pretty good shape. It didn't get damaged too bad.
No, sir. That's correct.
Water damage or wind? Do you know?
I can't be specific. I'm not sure.
Okay, great. Well, and as far as you know, you guys have you're safe, and you're now checking. And any percentage of homes that you know that you have left to go?
I don't. I think we're last count. I know we rescued over 70 today, and we encountered another 30 residents that chose, despite some water surrounding their homes, decided they would stay in their homes and ride it out in the anticipation that the water wouldn't get any higher. So we don't have a count on how many more homes to check, but we've gone through most of the calls for people wanting evacuation.
Sorry, Tom.
No, I was going to say, what was the first night's totals? Because I kept seeing 150, 200. Do you have an idea what the total number that you rescued just in the very first night?
Sure. It was around 350.
Wow.
And, sir, do you have any idea, just ballpark, what percentage of the town suffered flooding? Obviously, you don't have anything super specific, but just a run-of-the-mill figure from living there and working there, how much of the town was affected by floodwaters?
You know, I've lived here over 40 years, and it's the worst flooding that I've ever seen in all the hurricanes. I would say a good 30% maybe was affected by floodwaters. It was a pretty stout.
Wow. Well, I read on one internet site, but you can't trust everything you read on the internet. They claim that people in your town said it was the worst flood ever in the city as far as the height of the water. Can you comment on that? Have you heard that?
I have heard that, but I growing up here, we had Hurricane Hazel in 1954. Obviously, I wasn't here then, but the flooding then was comparable, and I've even heard some that were here then say it might have been a little bit worse at that point.
Okay, very well.
Lieutenant, how big is your police department?
We're about 90 sworn police officers and around 30 civilian employees.
Wow. How much was, do you have an idea? Did you have volunteer folks with boats and everything else helping you out?
Well, we did have quite a few staff from the city. Had in total city employees and those from other agencies that came to help out. We had 185 personnel assisting with the search and rescue. We had the pretty much the entire police department on staff. Also had some volunteer search and rescue teams come into town, and they were very helpful and made the job much better.
Wow, that's fantastic. Do you know where they had come from, what cities and stuff? We're nationwide, so we've got stations from coast to coast. Maybe we can give a shout-out to those cities and let them know that we're proud of their work.
Sure. I'm not familiar with all of the cities, but we had folks from as far away as Florida, Texas, Louisiana. And there was New York Police Department sent some staff down here to our region. So we were very fortunate to have so many agencies and so many people that were willing to come to our aid.
It sounds like you had a number of members from the different states have different names for them, but basically the Cajun Navy.
Sure, and they were here.
Okay. Yeah, they were instrumental in Houston with the flooding as well. And
I
so
heard that.
Yeah, and so a big shout out to everybody from the Louisiana, Texas, and all the other Cajun Navies that showed up there.
Yeah, we were happy to have them. They rescued quite a few folks from their homes here, and we were happy to have them come and help us out.
Well, that's fantastic. Lieutenant David Daniels, thank you very much for your work and your entire crew and people there. And we're happy to see that and hear from you that there's at least a light at the end of the tunnel in
yes.
New Bern.
Thanks for sharing with us, sir, and you guys hang in there.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You have a good night.
And this is meteorologist Tom Hale along with Steve Lenore, and you are listening to Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
We are back, Red Eye Radio, and we have another guest. Of course, that's our whole goal. We're looking for people who can give us the latest on what's going on out there. And obviously, there's a lot of trees toppled, and there's a lot of water to deal with. Rachel Cobb happens to be with the National Weather Service office in Columbia, forecaster with the office. Rachel, how you doing? You holding up okay?
Oh, yeah. We're doing well. How about you?
We're doing pretty good ourselves. This is our fourth night, and you guys have been very helpful by being guests and giving us updates on what's going on. And now the storm is moving slowly but surely in your direction. In the area that you cover, in fact, first, let the listeners know the area that you basically cover. What are the big towns that we would know by name?
Well, we cover Lancaster, South Carolina, Sumter, Columbia, which is where we're based, and Lexington, and all the way down to Augusta, Georgia.
Okay. And of course, in that area there, we've seen probably, 5 inches of rain so far in the course of this, at least 5 inches of rain coming. But what's your totals now?
Well, we actually, in Chesterfield County, we have a couple of rain gauges that are over 6 inches in the past 24 hours.
Okay. Well, and what kind of, what's your top winds have you had so far?
Top winds, well, for today, we've seen in Newberry County, we had a gust of 35.
Okay.
Well, recently, I guess that was in the past hour. We have seen gusts, though, over the past 2 days of 40 to 50 miles an hour.
Okay.
So, Rachel, this is Steve Lenore, the other meteorologist here, and thank you again for joining us. Sounds like your wind damage was probably pretty limited, but I have to guess with the wet soil, at least some trees were down and some scattered power failures, those kinds of things.
There were, yes. There's been numerous reports of trees and roadways and power lines down, but the crews are doing a great job getting all of that cleaned up very quickly.
Now, your office is the main coordination office with the governor's office, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. How often do you have those coordination meetings?
Well, in events like this, we will actually have forecasters stationed at the Emergency Operations Center that's down the road in Casey. I believe is the name of the town. So we've been staffing that for at least 12 hours a day, and the governor comes over there and they do briefings with him in person then from the Emergency Operations Center.
Okay. And in this situation, what's the most eye-opening thing? I mean, when you talk to a meteorologist, in many cases, if we look across the country, we've seen it all. But in this particular storm, what's the most eye-opening thing that you've seen as a forecaster?
Well, I guess how just small shifts in the track can dramatically change the forecast. And how much uncertainty there is with a tropical system. For days we watched this out in the Atlantic, and we had our hurricane track, and based, so many models to look at. And the track, the forecast track did shift from North Carolina to South Carolina and then back to North Carolina. And eventually it turned out it did make landfall in North Carolina. And, unfortunately for that state, they are getting the worst of it.
Rachel, this is Steve. I have a question about that concerning the hurricane forecast. How would you rate this forecast from the National Hurricane Center as far as the ability to plan based on what they were providing? I know these things are not perfect, they're not set in stone. In fact, I believe the five-day error is normally about 200-mile cone of error on that. But how would you rate this particular forecast with this event?
They did a great job. Florence was within their cone at all times. So given all the uncertainty and all the different model solutions that they had to deal with, I think the Hurricane Center did a really, really fantastic job, as they always do. And Florence, it came out as predicted. We did say it was going to hit the Carolina coast, and it did.
No, I'm glad you said that, because I was hoping that would be your response. I think those ladies and gentlemen down there just do a phenomenal job. And this type of a hurricane, especially with such weak steering currents, now that it's made landfall, is incredibly difficult to forecast. So, yes, amen, and hats off to the National Hurricane Center and to everybody at the Weather Service that works with them and keeps the public safe. Tom?
Yeah, I was. What I was surprised about this was that even 5 and as much as 7 days out, a couple of the models, European model in particular, seemed to hint at this. And my first reaction to it was it's going to do a little loop-de-loop here. And I don't know if you had that same kind of reaction, but initially for anyone, a layman looking at this, this was just going to go plowing straight on in. But at the same time, some of the other models were actually pointing at this light circulation and the left turning of this thing.
Yeah, that was evident many days out in the European, and even the GFS, our American model, was starting to show it. Just because of such, as you mentioned, the weak steering flow, it just lingers. So,
yeah. I wonder if we're getting into a period of, everyone has this kind of debate about it, but, we had Harvey, we've had this, and I think, Steve, you may have another couple examples that were similar.
Well, back a few years ago in 1979, Tropical Storm Claudette, at that time, set the U.S. 24-hour rainfall record near Houston at like 41 inches. It was just phenomenal because that thing just sat there for 2 days, kind of like what Florence is doing, but with even more of those warm core rains that just absolutely inundated.
Yeah, very
South
warm
Houston,
Gulf.
All the way down to Friendswood, if you're familiar with the Houston area. There were second-story homes that had water in the second floor. That just doesn't happen down there because it's just real flat and close to the ocean. But, yeah, that was another one that was really an extraordinarily wet storm.
Well, Rachel, I can't thank you guys enough. We'll probably check in with you some more as the night goes through. Where's the next area that you have greatest concern about in your coverage area?
Well, right now we're concerned about the rain, really. The winds are starting to die down. We do still have some 30-mile-an-hour gusts out there.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate that. We'll have more with Red Eye Radio in just a moment.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, here is meteorologist Tom Hale.
Along with meteorologist Steve Lenore, we are keeping track of Tropical Storm Florence. Tropical Storm Florence just does not want to give up, Steve.
No, that is absolutely right, Tom. In fact, this is a good example of how even a system that is now down to just 40 mile per hour winds, a minimal tropical storm, cannot be written off as kaput. This storm, of course, is very large. It's created tremendous amounts of rain, but it's still producing tornadoes. In fact, in the last hour, a tornado was confirmed. It developed just outside of Wilmington. It tracked northwest for about 10 miles, went across the Cape Fear National Golf Course. If you're familiar with that area around Wilmington, you'll know what that is. We have no reports of damage, but the National Weather Service said that they saw what they call a debris ball. This is something the newer technology can pick up now when items that the tornado is lofting into the air are picked up by the radar. It creates a certain kind of a signature. So that was confirmed by radar to be a tornado on the ground. That has come and gone now. That tornado dissipated about 30 minutes ago, again, just west of Wilmington. But these spiral rain bands produce most of the tornadoes in these kinds of systems, and that is the fourth tornado that we know of that Florence has produced. Yesterday, there was a tornado west of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, that did some tree damage. We've had three today, one near the Wrightsboro Beach that blew down some power poles, and the worst damage we've heard of, Tom, with these North Carolina tornadoes near Atkinson, which is also in the Wilmington area. Two mobile homes were flipped. Now, apparently no one was hurt in that, but it just goes to show you how these things are incredibly dangerous and these tornado warnings should be taken seriously.
Well, and that goes back to preparation, Steve. In this kind of situation, when tornado warning comes out, they don't last like the normal tornadoes that people see, like Wizard of Oz. You know, you watch it moving forever. But in this situation, we're talking about brief tornadoes, but can be very intense. And on top of it, it means that you need to be prepared the moment you hear a tornado warning, whether it's your phone and maybe you've got some warning system on there or weather app that has an automatic warning system. You need to be prepared. And doing that means that you need to have everything you need, like your tennis shoes and a pair of shoes and things, because I walk around the house barefoot every once in a while. And,
congratulations.
And, yes, exactly. And I kick my shoes off at the door. But I'm not going to run to the front door, okay, where I've got windows. I'm going to go to my safe place. So I need a spare pair of shoes in there. I need a hat or a bicycle helmet. And obviously, I need to be able to round up the whole family and do it very quickly.
You know, speed is of the essence. I tell kids, I do a lot of school visits as part of my job as a television meteorologist, go out and encourage science learning and things like that. And I'll tell these kids, you should have a game with your family and have a stopwatch and be able to get to your place of safety in 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
So that speed is of the essence.
Exactly. You want to give us a call. We love to hear from you. In fact, your call could encourage somebody else. Either you're somebody who is evacuated, you're somebody who is in the heart of it right now, but you're safe. So there are people out there listening nationwide that would like to know that. Our number is going to be 1-866-90-RED-EYE. That's 1-866-90-RED-EYE. And we're looking for your calls. And let's take a look at line one. Hello.
Hi.
Estelle?
Yes, sir. Hi. I was just calling to give an encouragement. And I know there's survivors in every situation. A young lady called the other night about Las Vegas and the washes there. And, there's all kinds of horrible things that go on out there, but in the washes, because people just don't know about it. But they come from all over the other states and they move there and they don't understand. But this, I lived there for 25 years and I was stationed at Nellis, and a gentleman had overturned his Jeep in a wash. It was really rainy, and the first responders came and they were taking him out, and all along, you know, the news is there and everything, and they extracted him, and the story goes as it goes, they took him to the hospital. He was incoherent. He was not responding, and they did at the hospital, they did, at that time it was something new, where he had hypothermia, and they took his blood out, warmed it, and put it back in, and it's quite amazing that he was sitting in the hospital room watching TV, and he got to watch his own his own accident, and the people with him, you know. And there's just so much that that can happen with the people that are the first responders, and what the people know these days. And it's just a story of survival that we witnessed in Las Vegas. That, you know, that don't ever give up hope.
Well, Estelle, you know what? The interesting part is that you're talking to probably somebody, and I'm sure there is someone out there that obviously we have not found, that's stranded on a second or third floor in their home. And if for any chance that they're listening to us, you've just provided tremendous encouragement to them. We all run into these kind of unexpected situations, and we find ourselves not knowing what to do. Sometimes we turn to God, we pray, we think of our family members and so forth. But the bottom line outcome of it is that we don't lose hope. And that is exactly what happened in this kind of a situation. And thank you for helping out. And more importantly, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Well, I give the glory to God, because he's where we always go to.
Well, I appreciate that very much. All right. Thank you, Estelle. You have a great evening. And Steve, have you got some more information here?
Yes, I do, Tom. I just wanted to comment on what Estelle said. You know, we'll be getting to the stage in a day or two where some people will be going back home. Some of them may have traveled hundreds of miles to Charlotte or Nashville, or one of my Facebook friends who lives in Florence, South Carolina, went all the way to Martinsburg, West Virginia. Maybe she has family there. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of tough to get a hold of her, but she's okay. So when they start heading back, there's going to be massive traffic jams. People are going to be impatient. There's going to be road damage from the flooding. Just want to encourage everybody to take it easy, okay? Like that old song by the Eagles. Just take it easy.
Take it easy.
And everybody can get back safe. Remember that this is a trauma for everybody involved. And if you've survived with no damage to your home or your family, that's fantastic. And that's what we're all hoping for. But getting back home can be a struggle. And then once you get back there, if you have had damage, you have to contact your insurance agent and create a to-do list of things to take care of business. So just don't get in too big a rush. Just, that would be my suggestion.
Okay. No, that's exactly a great suggestion. Now, taking a look at some of the interstates, we've got Westwood One correspondent Bill Michaels.
North Carolina wants motorists to go west out of Virginia into Tennessee and take Interstate 75 into Georgia. North Carolina Transportation Secretary Jim Trogdon explains why.
The one thing that we must do is provide safe services for people that are moving through our state. And the one thing I want to prevent is thousands of people stranded on our interstates or U.S. routes with flooding events on each side.
Flash flooding has closed sections of I-40, I-95, U.S. 70, U.S. 1, and U.S. 501 in North Carolina. State officials warn the flooding has just begun. I'm Bill Michaels.
And I want to let you know that you're going to have to be aware of that, and you can also go to many of the state websites, which will have traffic and road conditions, which will tell you what roads are open and what roads are closed. We're aware that there still is a large section, 16 miles at least at this point, down near Lumberton, north of Lumberton, I believe it is, that is closed on 95. And also we have reports of 40 where it comes out of Tennessee and comes past Raleigh and starts dropping down toward the coast. 40, I-40 has a large section of it closed as well.
The website to find out more about this for North Carolina, which is where the vast majority of these problems are, is going to be DriveNC, like North Carolina, DriveNC.gov is one of the websites where you can get updated information. It's not a very fancy website, but it's got the stuff you need there. So check it out. But yeah, I-95 is closed through the Fayetteville area. It's a mess, and maybe a while before that water drains off.
And we're going to get an update on actually what other roads that are closed from Pamela Walker. She happens to be North Carolina's state emergency response team, and we'll be talking with her coming up shortly on Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
We are back on Reddit iRadio. And you can also listen to us if you lose power for any reason. Just go to our website, redeyeradioshow.com, and go to the Listen Live button and flip it on there, and you'll have us again. So you never need to lose us out of this. And so to begin with, I am here with Steve Lenore. We are keeping an eye on Florence, who's got 40-mile-an-hour winds right now. But the real issue is just the pounding bands, feeder bands, still coming on shore through Wilmington, Raleigh, Fayetteville, and so forth. And, Steve, you've got some road information for us.
That's right, Tom. I went right to the source of this, the North Carolina Department of Transportation, their website, drivenc.gov. And here's what it says when you go to that website. Big letters. Travel extremely hazardous across North Carolina. On all roads south of U.S. 64 and east of I-73, motorists should not drive in these areas. Then it says farther down, conditions are constantly changing. Please check back before you travel. Big picture, folks, if you don't have to be out in this stuff, don't be. And if you do have to be for something that's a legitimate emergency or a need, you're out of medicine, something like that, please check the website before you go out, because with the floodwaters being what they are, floodwaters are still rising and will be for several days. Something that's open now might be closed tomorrow. One more note, motorists are advised to not travel on I-40 between I-95 and Wilmington, and that's because of the uncertainty of flooding conditions, is what it says right here, Tom, on the NC.gov website.
And if you don't heed that advice, you'll be probably meeting up with friends of Pam Walker. She's with the North Carolina State Emergency Response Team. Pam?
Hi, good evening, or good morning, I should say.
Yeah, good morning. Well, actually, in some parts of the country, it still is evening.
Okay, that's right.
Yep.
Good evening and good morning.
Yes. So tell me, what's the latest status report on electricity? I assume it's not coming back yet.
No, we still have close to 700,000 people without power. Those numbers are going up and down. So it's always, seems like it's over the last couple of days, it's somewhere in that neighborhood.
Now, I want to point out, because people have heard numbers that are up to like a million people, but that's a combined number, including South Carolina and North Carolina, when you
get
those numbers. And so, yes. But you're sitting with, you're sitting with a significant number of people in your state that without power.
That's right. We sure are. It's tough all over. You guys were just talking about the roads.
Yes.
And so the southeastern part of the state, moving into the sand hills, the central part, and even to the west, it's just a lot of heavy, heavy rain. They are predicting a lot more rain over the next few days, and they said that we could be dealing with this well into next week.
Wow. What's the story on 40? Is it actually closed, or is it just very hazardous?
Well, there are parts of 40 that are designated as closed or impassable, and it's mostly what you all were talking about in between I-95 and the city of Wilmington. So it's just a low lying area, as you can imagine, down near the coast. There is a lot of swamp, and it's just a low lying area. What else can I say?
Pam, this is Steve Lador. Good morning, if you're east of the Rockies, and
okay.
I think you are. So, listen, the North Carolina Department of Transportation also says on their website something that's kind of eerie. It says GPS systems are routing users into areas that NCDOT is not recommending for travel. Now, I don't know if you use a GPS when you travel around much, but I know this has happened to me. It sends me off into a field somewhere or on some back road that's one lane. So I wanted to call that to the people's attention, because I know there's been a lot of water rescues and there have been several flood deaths. Can you comment on that, the aspect of the danger of driving in these areas?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I've done the same thing. I've had GPS take me onto a dirt road somewhere out in the country somewhere, and so using GPS during times like this, that's a little scary. In fact, we saw one rescue earlier this evening, which was miles away from a river, and we had heard warnings about the river heating getting to major flood stage. But, you know, so people were very wary of that and knew about that. But this particular rescue was two cars that went down a road that was miles away from the river.
Pam Walker, thank you so much. North Carolina Emergency Response Team, you're listening to Red Eye Radio. Stay.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, meteorologist Tom Hale, this is Red Eye Radio.
We are back continuing our coverage of Tropical Storm Florence, 40-mile-an-hour winds moving west at a blazing 6 miles an hour. And it is 25 miles to the southeast of Columbia, South Carolina. And it's really not the center and the location. I'm with Steve Lenore. That's the problem. It's the feeder bands coming in off of the water that are really causing problems. And some of those have tornadic activity in them now.
That's right, Tom. And in fact, we've seen several tornadoes, three today that we know of in North Carolina. One of them did flip two mobile homes. As far as we know, no one was seriously hurt in that. So there's some real good fortune there. But in fact, the National Weather Service has a tornado warning out right now for the area near Wilmington, Heightsville, North Carolina. And those are moving northwest at 35 miles per hour. And that's consistent with the speed of all of these and the direction northwest as these feeder bands are coming in off the ocean and moving northwest. And according to the National Weather Service, we're still getting some of these feeder bands dumping rain up to 2 inches per hour on top of 2 feet plus of rain over much of eastern North Carolina. Just, Tom, just phenomenal flooding for this state, all-time record flooding, with Swansboro reporting more than 30 inches of rain. That apparently is a new tropical cyclone record rainfall for the state. That's a mouthful. But in other words, no other tropical storm or hurricane has ever produced that much rain in the state.
One of the things that I've been noticing on looking at the radar is that we're starting to get more pronounced couplets. In the past, it was kind of quasi. You could look at it and you'd say, well, maybe that's it and maybe that's it. But now we're starting to actually see some red and green, and they look to be a little more pronounced. So I'm wondering, the conditions seem maybe a little more favorable now that the primary wind from Tropical Storm Florence has diminished. Now the thunderstorms are starting to actually get a better feel to develop.
Well, we have this thing called frictional convergence, which is, think about the amount of friction you get when wind blows over the land and over the trees and the hills and the buildings. So down near the ground, the wind dies out faster in a decaying tropical system like this, whereas 4,000 or 5,000 feet above the ground, the wind's blowing considerably faster because there's a lot less friction up there. And that differential between the friction near the ground and the much less friction a mile or two up can create little spin-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And these tornadoes don't typically last very long. I like to call them zip-nados, Tom. That's my nickname for them.
Zip-nados?
They zip up and zip back down in 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes most of the time. But during that 5 minutes, they can generate 100-mile-per-hour winds. They can flip mobile homes like we saw today, and that happened near Wilmington as well. So we can't dismiss these tornadoes as insignificant. They're not generally going to be huge, but they can do some pretty serious damage.
Yeah, in Florida, we happen to have a similar type situation. And that is that we have very short 6 minute at most tornadoes, and that's for most of it. And right now on the phone we happen to have Brian Haynes. He's with the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Brian, are you there? Yeah, obviously.
Hey, how's it going,
Tom? Hey, good. So we've had some bad connections with some of the offices over the last couple of days, and in fact Wilmington. I don't know if you've had conversations with Wilmington, but there were times that it was really difficult to even get a clean phone call into them.
Yeah, we've had definitely conversations with the surrounding offices, but yeah, they've been hit hard down there.
Well, now they're also very busy because from what I can tell, they're still dealing with an active warning. Well, no, it looks like they just expired that particular warning, the one in Brunswick. But the other warning, I think, is still going on for the folks over in Heightsville. No, that is the one. They just let it go just a minute or so ago.
Brian, Steve, this is Steve Lenore. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm pretty good, and I thank you again for joining us tonight. When we spoke with you last night, One of the things we talked about quite a bit was the flooding and how it impacted travel. And I have a quote written down that you gave us, just two words that make a lot of sense. Don't travel. So here we are 24 hours later. Would you say that's still good advice? Have things improved at all, or have they gotten worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's still good advice, in particular across Sampson County, Cumberland counties, especially in our area across those southern counties. There's a lot of issues going on in Sampson County. There's about a total of 81 roads covered by high water, and they have multiple road washouts, and that's just one particular tidbit from Sampson. But Cumberland has a lot of issues as well. And then, of course, I-95 is closed between Fayetteville and Dunn. So I think that's generally good advice.
What is the projection? And, of course, Cumberland County is Fayetteville, which is a pretty large city. It's 200,000 people, which I believe is the seventh largest city in the state. So it's a sizable community. What are the projections for the Cape Fear River on how high it'll get into the town? Is it going to flood the city? How much flooding will there be? Do you guys have any handle on that?
Sure. So right now we're expecting the Cape Fear at Fayetteville to get to about 62 feet, a little bit more than 62 feet. At 60 feet, you know, the water begins to bypass the left end of the North Carolina 24 Bridge, and then 2 miles downstream, the left bank widens and to about 1,000 feet, to put in perspective. At 64 feet, several thousands of acres of land and structure on both sides of the river begin to become flooded. So right now our projection's right in between those two impact statements. So we really definitely need to continue to watch the Cape Fear down in Fayetteville, that's for sure.
So basically what you're telling us is if the projection now, which is about 62 and some change, if that's as high as it gets, it really won't flood that many structures, but we're living on the edge here, pretty much.
It's
what you're close, saying?
Right. Yeah, North Carolina 24 is going to begin to go over North Carolina 24 at 60, but major structure, I think, or structure damage, I'm taking a look here, begins to start at 64.
Okay, sir. Thank you, Tom.
Well, and the next thing is, what's the next major issue that you guys are addressing beyond flooding?
Sure. You know, I mean, I really do still think, though, flooding's the primary threat here, and whether that be from just inland flooding or potential dam failures, any one of those type of things, I think those are definitely things we're taking a look at here and taking seriously, river flooding. And, you know, this is something that's going to last for a while. So that 62 feet we were talking about at Fayetteville, that's not expected to happen, to put in perspective, until Tuesday. So, you know, it feels like we've been dealing with Florence here for quite some time, which we have, but it's only Sunday. So we're still going to have to wait for the rivers to crest and then slowly come on back down.
Now you're obviously, the National Weather Service system is aggregated by a number of different information providers that put out applications that launch cell phone warnings. You guys directly launch any cell phone, or is that by county or by community that decides to sign up for a given service?
Yeah, so when we put out, for example, if we were to put out a flash flood warning and cell phone, whether your cell phone goes off, I'm sure you guys have had cell phones that have gone off before when we issue a warning.
Mm-hmm.
That's based off of the WEA wireless emergency alert. So we're not the one directly pressing the button. We have to get into the WEA system, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
Which we are in, obviously, that system with the flash flood and severe and tornado. But, you know, we can also apply if we want for other warnings to be put in that system. But that's through the WEA system.
Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned, is it concern for dam failures? Are there any on your list that you have any concern for? Or at the moment, they all appear to be stable? Question mark?
As of right now, everything's generally okay. I think right now we're really looking at just a continued preset. That's what we're really keeping an eye on here.
Okay.
And where that falls.
All right. And so, at this point in your area, you haven't issued or had any in the last, I'm going to say in the last few hours, you haven't had any tornado warnings that you've had to issue. Am I correct?
That is correct. Yeah, there was a couple circulations that came close to the area across southeast of Sampson County. But as I heard you guys talking about down in Wilmington's area, they've been primarily the office busy tonight with at least the tornado threat.
Brian, this is Steve, and I'm curious, and there's been some very good modeling with this storm as far as We knew there would be some extraordinary rainfalls even before the thing made landfall. But now that it's inland and it's weakening, how have the projections, let's say, in the last 24 hours of forecast rain matched up with what we're getting? Is the storm still putting out more rain than expected, or is it about what y'all were expecting, and how is that affecting your decision-making on the forecast and warning side?
Yeah, so just to answer, you know, your initial question, so a lot of the global models being whether it be the GFS, Euro, they did actually they've done fairly well with the QPF estimates. And by what I mean by QPF is the amount of precipitation that's forecasted. And a lot of our higher resolution models have also done fairly well. So I'd say overall the models have met our forecast, and our forecast has also met what's actually happened for the most part. There's obviously been differences in the exact location and the spatial distribution of that rainfall. But overall, things have matched fairly well. And, you know, so far we're forecasting more rainfall today, and that looks to be at least kind of what the latest runs have been showing. So I think more rain's on the way today.
And can you give us a number on that? I've seen numbers tossed around 2 inches, 4 inches, 6 inches. So folks that are listening that may want to get back home, how long are they going to have to wait based on your forecast? I know you can't answer for the highway so much.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, like you guys said, I can't actually answer for whether the highways will be open or not, but I can just say from our forecasted precipitation total, so, for example, Sampson County, I'd say another 2 to 4 inches is possible. Then out west being in Anson County area in general, another possibly up to 8 inches, if not nine to 10 inches across.
Wow, that's
across the western counties. So, with that being said, across the east, so, you know, we're talking anywhere from Anson, Stanley, Davidson, Montgomery, Richmond. Those are the areas that are really going to come into focus today for more of the precip as Florence begins to push west, the northwest, and northeast. Across the east, the totals won't be as high. So, for example, Sampson, Wayne, Edgecombe, Wilson, totals will still be a couple inches, but nothing like what they've seen yesterday. That's going to move to the west slightly.
That's going to bring your totals up to what number? Have you added those together?
Yeah, so I'd highly encourage everyone, if they're curious to see how everything's evolving precipitation-wise, if you go to weather.gov/RAH and you type in Florence update with a capital F and U for update, you'll see at the very top we have our estimated total rainfall so far. That's the first graph. And that is an estimate, derived estimate from satellite and other radar measurements. And then there is a second image below, which shows you what our additional forecast is. And then at the very bottom, it adds the two together.
Okay.
So for the Sampson County area, we're looking for totals to be, in general, 20 to 30 inches across the south and across the north, 15 to 20. And then for the Fayetteville area, we're looking for about 15 to 20 inches in total after the storm's entirely done.
Hmm. Okay. And
those
then, of course,
the higher amounts.
Now, am I correct to assume the Fayetteville area is also kind of a drainage basin?
Sure.
Yeah, it pools from all kinds of different directions, and so that's another aspect of the flooding beyond the river. And so at this point, any advice you'd like to give the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the listeners just need to remember that if they live in an area that's been particularly hit hard, to make sure you're aware of the road closures going on and definitely heed all road closures and any type of evacuation orders that you may or may not receive in your area. I think that's critical, and people need to understand that it's being done for a reason. Please heed the warnings and heed any evacuation orders that you receive, please.
Great. Thank you very much. Brian Hayes, National Weather Service, Raleigh, North Carolina. We'll be checking back in with all the different Weather Service offices as we go through the night. But we want to go through the night with you, with us. Give us a call. We are live, okay? And we are live because we want to hear from you, and we want to bring you the latest information of what's going on with major flooding across the Carolinas. The number is 1-866-90-RED-EYE. That's 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Or it's 1-866-907-3339. And you're listening to Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Yeah, Red Eye Radio, meteorologist Tom Hale and meteorologist Steve Lenore. We are here with you through the night. We want to hear from you at Red Eye Radio, 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
You know, Tom, last night we had a lot of callers, and I want to thank everybody that called last night and those that have already called tonight to share their weather stories or to tell us about what's happening in the disaster zone. You don't have to be in that zone to call us. We would love to hear your input, your questions, or whatever you may have.
No, and in fact, some people have evacuated, and they've called, and they've wanted to know what are the conditions, is it safe to come back home? And so let's take a look at line one. John, you're in Decatur, Illinois. Tell me, what's up?
I got a sister in Charlotte, and when they first reported, right as it was hitting landfall, they estimated 5.4 inches, and then I think this morning I said 8, and I was wondering what the update is for Charlotte as far as rainfall.
Steve's got that.
What's interesting, sir, and thank you for calling, is that these reports can vary with different parts of the city or different parts of the county. The Douglas International Airport in Charlotte, surprisingly, has only had a couple inches of rain. I'm looking back at their observations over the last several days. Most of the rain has been a little farther east or south related to the airport. The serious flooding has definitely been farther east than that. Now, they're projecting additional rainfall that may be up to 6 inches. And I'm thinking maybe that's what you heard. Based on these reports, we really haven't seen anything in the Charlotte area quite that heavy yet. But there is potential for that. And, in fact, there's a thing called the radar estimated rainfall. You can look at the actual radar storm total rainfall, what has happened based on the cumulative rainfall amount. And it's showing from the National Weather Service in the Raleigh area. It's been generally 2 to 4 inches. Been a little higher to the east, of course, closer to the storm circulation, and a little lower to the west. That's at Raleigh. In Charlotte, it's about half that. So, again, just a couple inches so far, but they may get quite a bit more, and there is concern as Florence moves that way tonight and tomorrow that the rain will increase in Charlotte. But so far, it's really not that bad there.
Okay.
And do you know when it'll clear out of Charlotte?
Say it again, sir.
Do you know when it will be clear of Charlotte? Another several hours?
According to the National Hurricane Center forecast track, they have that system moving a little bit faster, and they have it turning into a tropical depression overnight, which means the wind continues to spin down. They have it passing Charlotte tomorrow. Well, Charlotte should be on the dry side of the storm by mid-afternoon.
Okay, so, I just one more question.
Sure.
When Katrina hit, I saw a documentary that said when they used to have the marshes there, they were a natural barrier for storm surge. So isn't there a way they could build an artificial barrier that would kind of, they could put out there during hurricanes to prevent all this storm surge?
Well, they do have jetties, and I'm sure you've heard of those. In certain areas, they'll have a large collection of rocks they pile up to limit the wave action during normal tidal activity. When you get a storm surge, an area that has a jetty like that or a seawall like Galveston, that does help control that. It's not practical to build one along an entire beach for hundreds of miles, so they tended to have done that just in certain areas where there's population centers. But, yeah. They do that.
The Ninth Ward is an example of that. The Ninth Ward, the Army Corps of Engineers spent a tremendous amount. I think the number was almost up to $1 billion in putting in a reinforcing seawall and not really a jetty, but and that was primarily because they had breaches of the walls that they had already previously built, and a large portion of the Ninth Ward is under below sea level, and a big portion of New Orleans is underneath that, and so that entire town is designed to be, you know, barricaded. But we're not talking, you know, millions, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to accomplish that just for areas of a city. And so that's really the challenge. And then they kind of factor in the risk about how often are they going to be hit on that particular spot. And so, you know, those are the challenging issues. Hey, John, thank you very much. We'll definitely be keeping our prayers and thoughts for your family members. You're listening to Red Eye Radio.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, here is meteorologist Tom Hale.
And along with meteorologist Steve Lenore, we are following Tropical Storm Florence. And Florence has, the Tropical Storm Advisory has came out about an hour ago, and they are continuing it as a tropical storm with 40-mile-an-hour winds moving west at about 6 miles an hour. And the situation out there is still the same. We talked about this even before it came on shore, that the ground had already been saturated by some significant rains that they had had previously. Even Tropical Storm Gordon that went through Louisiana and edged Texas and Arkansas, then ended up exiting, by the way, the Carolinas. So the ground was already saturated. And then we come in with winds and more rain, and it's a real tree toppler when it comes to just the shallow ground and the shallow roots that are out there. In fact, we've had some deaths. Wilmington, a young woman and her child in her home. Tree comes through, and we lost two people there. And as it stands, you know, bottom line is that a lot of this flooding is associated with death, and probably a greater number than just the wind or I'm going to use the term random, not to minimize it, tree falling on somebody's home. And so we want to know about experiences that you might have had with bad weather to begin with. And also, you may actually have an experience associated with this storm, and we definitely want to hear about that. You just need to give us a call at 1-866-90-RED-EYE, 1-866-90-RED-EYE, or basically that would be 1-866-907-3339. And by the way, if you have any issues in regards to power, or if the radio station doesn't carry the show into the next coming hour, you can go right over to Red Eye Radio Show, redeyeradioshow.com, and you can click the Listen Live button. And, of course, the best way to do it is to install the Red Eye Radio app, okay, available in your favorite app store, and you can listen live anytime. You can even plug it into your car, and next thing you know, it's coming through your speakers and your car radio. So here's the bottom line. A lot of folks out there are dealing with a lot of water. And Natasha Chin, correspondent with Westwood One, has been out on the road taking a look at this.
Deadly Florence slowly crawls across the Carolinas, bringing devastating flooding and relentless rain.
Powerful torrents of water are flooding homes, wiping out roads, and sweeping away cars in North Carolina.
Communities like New Bern, North Carolina, are now underwater. The rivers are already rising from the record rainfall, and many waterways are not expected to reach the highest levels for another couple of days.
This is not over. All the water upstream has to come downstream. We are doing all we can.
Thousands are under new evacuation orders as people who live in these communities escape to higher ground.
The river's coming up into our property.
Yeah, we've been moving beds, linens, clothes, as much stuff as we could to get it out, you know, so we won't lose it.
We know it's time to go. It's already up in our yard.
Emergency officials say people may encounter walls of water even when Florence eventually subsides.
We're in a situation that is progressing and has us extremely concerned when it comes to the threat to life safety of citizens here in Cumberland County. We do believe that there will be a worst-case scenario.
In Wilmington, North Carolina, I'm Natasha Chin reporting.
You know, Natasha Chin brings up a valid point. There are a number of different reasons that people have died in this particular storm. Steve, you have the latest count, and you have some of the circumstances.
That's right, Tom, and these are just terribly sad things. We only share this to reemphasize how important it is to be safe, how it can happen to you. It's just one bad decision or even just a moment where you're not paying attention can get you killed.
Lack of situational awareness.
Sometimes it's just bad luck. So here are some of the reasons people have died in this storm. And up to the moment, we have 13 confirmed dead. There may be more than that. Sometimes someone has perished and they don't discover them, especially in a storm like this with so much flood water. But three people died in Duplin County. That's about 40 miles north of Wilmington. This is in the area with the heaviest rain because of flash flooding and swift water on roadways. The sheriff His name is Blake Wallace, said that all three were in cars that were swept away by floodwaters, and they were not related incidents. So there were three separate incidents in this county, Duplin County, North Carolina. Swift water got them, okay? In Cumberland County, which is where Fayetteville is, another area with extreme flooding, the Cape Fear River is predicted to be at an all-time record crest in the next couple of days. A fire that was storm-related killed two people. There's not a whole lot of additional information on that. It might have been started by lightning. Might have been some other circumstance there. There was one person killed by carbon monoxide poisoning because they didn't properly vent a generator. Okay, that's very, very important when you have a loss of power and you have a backup power source like a diesel or gasoline generator. Make sure those fumes get properly vented out of the structure. That is just terribly sad. And a woman was killed when she drove into a tree that was across the road. This was Friday night. She was driving at night in a hurricane at that time, I think. It still was a hurricane.
Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah.
Or a strong tropical storm. So another example of how really you need to stay where you're at in a case like that. And not to minimize the tragedy, I feel terrible for her and her family. She probably just didn't see the tree. You know, it's dark. It's raining really hard. And there's this dangerous object in the road. And you run into it. So those are some of the reasons people were killed that we know of so far.
Well, we've got Steve Benson with us. He's happens to be, no, he's actually, Steve is in Benson in North Carolina. And Steve, is the rain still coming down?
It sure is, but it's not showing any sign of letting up. Or what they're telling us is that this rain band could go on to Monday, Tuesday, even Wednesday. The thing is slowed down to a crawl. It's like 2 or 3 miles an hour forward motion, and that's what's killing us. The winds are no problem no more. Where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Now you're southeast of Raleigh, right?
Yeah, very southeast. I'm about 2 miles. I'm about 2 hours driving time from Wilmington.
Okay.
So
that puts you almost that puts you halfway in between them, but you're more south of Raleigh than you are in between South Raleigh and Wimbledon, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
south
sir.
And east.
This is a Steve Gutter meteorologist here. I'm looking at the map because, you know, we're not 100% familiar with all the little towns in your great state. Looks like you're right on I-40, I-95. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right at it.
And do you have any knowledge of how bad the flooding is on those roads right now? We know that parts of them are closed.
Parts of them are closed because of the local flooding of creeks and stuff like that. But, you know, we personally have not had that problem here. So we've got things like not far from me is not too far from me is Fort Bragg, and they're concerned about the Little River and the Cape Fear River. Supposed to come up to about 20-something feet, I believe, which will cause a lot of problems. It could even come over the bridge there in a town called Lillington. And, you know, it's a rain event right now in North Carolina. Like I say, the winds, you get a gust every once in a while, but it's not bad at all. But rain constant.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask, what are you doing? What are you doing personally to be safe?
Well, we hadn't had electricity since yesterday morning, so I'm keeping the generator gassed up.
Yes.
So we can eat.
You're not having any problem getting gas, I hope.
Well, tomorrow we will have used our initial reserve, so I could answer that better, maybe tomorrow. But no, the station I got that from, I asked him, was we okay? And he said, I just filled up and good, I think. So I'm hoping that that's correct.
Sir, this is Steve once again. You mentioned a generator, and I immediately thought of the story I read right before you came on about the couple that succumbed to carbon monoxide from their generator. Tell the folks out there in our listenership how you have that ventilated to keep it safe.
Well, you can't put the bad part about a generator, you cannot set it out in torrential rain, so you have to put it under some kind of shelter. Now, what we're doing is we have it on the front porch, but we have the exhaust, the muffler, facing to the house, and of course, the doors closed and the windows closed. So, but we are only—we're not running it continuously. We're running it sporadically to refreeze the freezer, refrigerator, and basically it, we're waiting to almost night. Sundown.
Sounds like you're doing a pretty good job of keeping that thing safe, though, sir. Glad to hear it.
Thank you very much. Hey, we're going to have Sam on the phone next. He also is on the road. We definitely want to hear his situation. Coming up on Red Eye Radio, this is meteorologist Tom Hale and Steve Lenore.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio with Steve Lenore, and I'm meteorologist Tom Hale. Let's jump right onto the phone. Sam is driving. Sam, where are you right now?
We're on I-95 North in South Carolina.
Okay. And you're headed where?
Our final destination is Wingate, which is like a little bit east of Charlotte, North Carolina, and we've got we're seeing a lot of signs saying I-95 NC is closed, but we have a friend in Columbia, and she said we should be able to drive through there, so that's where the GPS has got us going.
Okay. At this point, Steve has got that road tracked out. You're going to take, as far as I know, a 95, then you're going to get up 26 into Columbia, and then from there you're going to take 77 north?
Yep.
Okay, good. Steve?
Okay, thanks for calling, and I'm glad that things are working out for you so far. It doesn't look too bad. Now, you're going to run into some rain pretty soon. By the time you get to Orangeburg, according to the latest National Weather Service radar, you'll start running into some light, pesky rain there, nothing super heavy, but you'll have to run the wipers. The roads will be wet. It'll gradually get heavier as you get north of Columbia, and you'll run into some pretty heavy rain between Columbia and Charlotte. But they've only had about 2 inches of rain in Charlotte, so we're not looking for big flooded roads at this point in time if you're already on the road headed there. I mean, you're about, 3 or 4 hours from Charlotte, max, if that, so?
Yeah, we're about 3.5 since we're going through Columbia.
My advice to you would be to watch out. If you get into heavy rain, slow down to avoid hydroplaning. And watch out for the other guy. Don't drive excessively fast. But you should be okay based on the weather we have currently. But you're definitely going to run into some moderate to heavy rain as you get farther north. Probably not any severe highway flooding. We don't see anything indicated like that in that part of the state.
And if you have some very heavy rain, the key for you on this, especially if you're in the 77 Highway 77 range, you're going to be cutting through a band of rain. And so if you were to pull over to the road because it was heavy, you might stay in that same band of rain, training rain over you constantly, and you're going, when is this going to end? Well, you actually just parked in the middle of the railroad tracks of rain coming through. So just slow down and then continue your movement, just you'll cut through that band of rain in probably 10-15 minutes and then be clear again.
Well, there's two bands of rain on the radar. As you get just north of Columbia, you'll run into the first one, and you'll notice it'll really pick up there. And between Columbia and the state line will be your heaviest rain. The rain does let up some as you get into North Carolina, at least for now. Now, this whole thing's moving, so later on tonight, it'll start raining harder in Charlotte, too. But based on the speed you're going and all, you should be okay. Just, you know, don't drive too fast. That's a lot of folks getting wrecks that way. They hydroplane off the road, and bam, that's it. So we'll hope that won't be you.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Make sure.
Thank you so much, sir.
No problem at all. Thank you, Sam, and have a safe trip. Okay. We're going to be getting back to the phones on Red Eye Radio, 1-866-90-RED-EYE. And so get to your phones, call, let us know what you need. We're going to do our best to help you out, whether it's weather information or whether an area you're concerned about, family, friends. We've got all that information here, and if we don't have it, just give us a couple seconds and we'll fish it out. Bottom line, Steve Lenore, and I'm meteorologist Tom Hale, and you are listening to Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, meteorologist Tom Hale, this is Red Eye Radio.
And I am here along with meteorologist Steve Lenore. We are continuing the continuing coverage of what was Hurricane Florence, now Tropical Storm Florence. This storm has one hefty little circulation that just doesn't want to die, and it's moving very slowly, 6 miles an hour, 25 miles southeast of Columbia, South Carolina, and that is away from the folks over in Charleston. But we have with us on the line from Charleston, we've got Steve Raleigh. I guess Blair Holloway is now allowed to sleep. Is that correct, Steve?
That's correct. Blair has a well-deserved night off, so you've got me this morning.
Well, so he doesn't even have a cot there. In other words, you've told him he can go home, right?
I believe that's where he is, yes.
That's good to hear. I don't even want to touch that line. All right. So tell me, what is going on in your neck of the woods?
Actually, here in the Charleston forecast area, not a whole lot. We did get some rain, 1 to 3 inches, say, between the Charleston Tri-County area and the South Santee River, which is the northern border of our forecast area. But a lot of that fell during the day, Sunday or Saturday rather. But we have really dodged a bullet with this storm. A lot of drier air continued to circulate around the southern side of this storm. And if you look at a radar presentation, all the big thunderstorms are out to our east off the Atlantic, and they're wrapping back into southeastern North Carolina and then back into northern South Carolina. And we're kind of in the dry air right now, so there's not a lot of wind, very little in the way of rain at this point. In fact, the radar looks very, very similar to the way it looked last night. This storm was not too much farther east last night from where it is right now.
No, in fact, we have a radio affiliate that listeners are listening on that is in Georgetown, and halfway between you and Myrtle Beach, and they hadn't had any brunt of it there. They were on the edge of that. It seems almost Myrtle Beach was a dividing line. The north side of town seemed to get hammered. The south side of Myrtle Beach dodged the bullet. Would you say that's about the same thing that you noticed?
Well, there's quite a bit more rain in Myrtle Beach right now, actually, than there was when I was in the office about 24 hours ago. So I wouldn't want to completely call this off yet. There's still some very heavy rain in the vicinity, but certainly the heavier rain, the catastrophic type rains that you've been hearing about, have definitely occurred farther to the north, up in southeastern North Carolina.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm looking at those rains in the Myrtle Beach area right now, and they seem to be starting to stretch their way down toward Georgetown. And one band that literally hugs the border between north and south Carolina. And so you've been on the dry side the whole time out of this. What was your rainfall total again?
Well, I'll have to take a look. Our rainfall total here at the airport yesterday, I believe, was just under an inch. But let me double-check that for you. Looks like here at the airport, we had 0.98 inches. So we were just under an inch. And I live about 20 miles east-southeast of here, the airport. And I had a little bit over an inch in my gauge. And we did get some reports of some folks that had around, 2 to 3 inches of rain up toward the South Santee River. So as you went north, it was definitely a difference. But we, did not get any reports of flooding, anything along those lines. It looks like we had, around 3 inches up toward the South Santee mm-hmm. River, which is where we expected the heavier rain to fall. And there's not a whole lot going on up in that area even tonight. It was definitely wetter in that area last night about this time than it is now.
What are the driving conditions like?
The driving conditions here, aside from some small debris on the roads, we had a lot of pine needles. We have a lot of pine trees in this part of the world, a lot of small limbs, leaves. But the roads, we didn't get enough rain to really produce any water problems on our roads here locally in the Charleston area. But still, there's quite a bit of debris on the roads. And, when that gets wet, you've always got to be careful driving because the roads will get a little slicker than you might otherwise expect. But overall, aside from a scattering of trees and tree limbs on power lines and that sort of thing, with the strongest winds really that occurred last night into the day Saturday, we made out pretty well here.
What was your wind max? Do you happen to know?
I think we hit 53 miles per hour right here. Let me look at my report for some of the latest. I've been paying very close attention to the weather in Wilmington, North Carolina. They've had some rotating thunderstorms that have been continuously coming on shore, not to mention the unbelievable rainfall rates. So I haven't looked at this report in a couple of hours, but let me take a look here. Yes, 53 miles per hour here at the airport. We have a sensor just behind Fort Sumter out at the mouth of Charleston Harbor that hit 55 miles per hour, and that was, that was at 7:36 p.m. on Friday night, actually. So what happened was, what was interesting, our strongest winds here at the airport when the first rain band came in late Friday evening, we actually had some of our stronger wind gusts as those initial rain bands came mm-hmm. in. And then after that, things settled into more of a classic tropical storm type winds. But we did have some of our stronger wind gusts right at the start of this thing. We've got another buoy that's located well off the coast here east of Charleston Harbor, and they had a wind gust of 54 miles per hour. So we had a few wind gusts that were over 50 miles per hour. Most of our gusts were in the upper 30s to middle 40s miles per hour across our South Carolina counties, and it was quite a bit less as we got down into Georgia.
Well, and you mentioned that I think we've all been looking at Wilmington in regards to those bands that continue to feed moisture in. That band really hasn't moved more than 50 to 75 miles, slowly drifting south as this storm has slowly shifted off to the west. And so some areas have been under that band from its beginning, from the southern edge of the band as it moved south from landfall down to the northern edge of the band, which then it stretches into Wilmington. And so some areas have really been hammered across that area for rainfall.
And the feeder bands on the east side of the system continue to develop out over the Gulf Stream and then push up into southeastern North Carolina. I've been in this business for a long time, and something of this duration and this intensity, I can't really remember anything quite like this. So, they talk about historic, catastrophic, unprecedented rainfall amounts up in that neck of the woods, up in eastern, southeastern North Carolina. This really is, something that folks that have been in the business for 25, 30 years or longer will tell you that we just haven't seen anything like this before.
Well, Steve, I want to introduce you to Steve Lenore, meteorologist that I happen to work with in our television station. And Steve is quite the historian when it comes to that. Steve?
Well, Steve, nice to talk to you, and thank you for your time. I have a couple of questions, first of all. You mentioned something about the trees earlier, and we don't have very many pine trees where we live in this part of Texas. And I know trees vary around the country, but I was wondering if you could offer a little perspective on, is there anything about the trees you guys have there that would tend to make them sturdier or less sturdy in a given wind of, say, 50 miles an hour? They're more likely to blow over or break than trees somewhere else, or because the soil has been so wet from the rain, does that make them more likely to topple over?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's actually a combination of both. Our pine trees do tend to snap off probably more easily than some other species of trees. Our live oaks, for instance, we've got a lot of beautiful old live oak trees in this neck of the woods, and they're very sturdy trees. If they start breaking, you're talking about some very serious winds. But the pine trees will give us a lot of trouble. But, you know, it's interesting you bring up the rain. We've had a very wet summer here in this neck of the woods, and that certainly does bring down, a given wind gust, say a given 50-mile-per-hour wind gust, will bring down more small to medium-sized trees, tree branches, and that sort of thing. And if they're in the vicinity of power lines, we have the obvious result of having power outages. So it's a combination of the type of vegetation we have. Some of our trees are very sturdy. Some of our trees, and mainly our pine trees, maybe not so sturdy, but the rainfall that we've had this summer definitely plays a role in that. So as things really started to get cranked up during Friday night into the day, first part of the day Saturday especially, we had some of our stronger winds. There were quite a few trees that came down. And the wind gusts were not strong enough where you would expect to have widespread tree damage, and yet we did have scattered trees down. And I suspect it was a combination of that some of the trees that came down were probably pine trees, but some of them were in a position where, because of the wet ground, they came down more easily than they might otherwise have.
And that's a good response, because, I was going to follow that up with this question. Hearing the reports in North Carolina, I'm sure you've been following them too. A lot of the inland stations never had gusts much over 60 miles per hour. So do you find the tremendous number of trees that were blown over there to be unusual, or is that consistent with the kind of trees you guys have there?
Well, 60 mile per hour wind gust, let's say that was a single thunderstorm. We suspected that a single thunderstorm was going to produce a 60 mile per hour wind gust. We would issue a severe thunderstorm warning. We would expect that those types of speeds to have some trees down, and that's our severe thunderstorm warning criteria. Interestingly, the problem with a tropical system like this, if the winds can gust at those speeds, but it just keeps doing it for hours and hours on end, especially with a slow moving system like this. So you get a lot more wind damage. So no, with wind gusts, around 60 miles per hour, I would expect to see a significant amount of tree damage, especially with the duration. But again, the rains and the tremendous amount of rains that they've had up in to the north of our forecast area has definitely, no doubt about it, that would have played a role in the number of trees that came down in this event.
Tom mentioned to me while you were commenting on the previous question, just briefly, he whispered he does tornado damage assessments, which that's very exciting to me. And I wanted to follow up then with the thought, I know that these spiral bands have had several tornado warnings and at least one confirmed tornado tonight near Wilmington based on a debris ball signature. Are you involved in the damage surveys after a storm like this? Will you be one of the people that goes out and part of that team?
Well, ordinarily, the way that we handle this is you'll do the storm surveys in your own forecast area. So, if the folks at the Wilmington office, they're very busy with a whole lot of weather right now. They're still in tropical operations. They have severe weather. They've got flash flooding going on. But at some point, over the next couple of days, they'll try to get out and survey those. Sometimes if it's really, really busy, we'll try to pull in help from other National Weather Service offices, and perhaps we'd be, you know, perhaps they'd want to get us some of us up there for that sort of thing. We try to help each other out as much as possible. At the same time, though, it's a very unique situation there that it's not safe to be outside for the general public. For meteorologists trying to do storm surveys, and we have to balance safety with the need for the information, with the need to confirm that tornadoes actually occurred. And there have been a lot of situations, a lot of surveys that we've conducted here in our local area that we've had to really take a close look at the weather. If we expected additional severe weather, say, on a given afternoon, we'd have to consider that when we were making plans to go out and do storm surveys. So, as far as what their plans are right now, I can't speak to that directly, but having been in, I wouldn't say similar situations, because again, this is unprecedented in a lot of ways, but they have a lot of things to consider, the ongoing weather situation, the safety factor and so forth. So, but in a typical situation, say this was just a band of thunderstorms that just went through their area, they had some tornado reports, then there are folks at the local offices who are trained to go out and assess the tornado damage. And they go out as part of storm survey teams. And that's the way things are typically done. But we may have to, improvise and, do some other things in this situation.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm glad you're there. And we may be checking back with you as this thing moves out. But obviously, you're going to have the improving weather. And no one's going to complain about that. Charleston is a place to go as the storm moves away. Of course, you're going to have a lot of other people coming up through that area trying to get back to their homes, and they're going to be wanting to know weather conditions as well. And so we've got some callers sitting on the line that we're going to be getting to just shortly. Thank you very much, Stephen Raleigh in the Charlotte, North Carolina office. You're listening to Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist Tom Hale. Steve Lenore is right here. And again, this is Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
And we are back on Red Eye Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, John Porter, insurance expert with GDP Advisors, will be with us. He'll be talking to us about disaster insurance rates, all kinds of information that you might want to know, especially if you've been in a storm or dealing with one anywhere in the country. But right now, I want to go to Jordan in Mesquite, Texas. Jordan,
thanks for taking my call.
Look, I apologize for the wait, and how can we help you?
No, you... That's perfectly fine. I've got family who lives in Jacksonville, North Carolina. They live right off the river there, and they waited it out. They stayed there, and they've been giving us, like, updates very sporadically online. But I heard earlier, something about floodwaters continuing even after the water or the rain has stopped. So I wondered if Jacksonville would be kind of under that threat.
All of this entire storm area is under the threat of the floodwaters because it's all got to drain off. And so the rivers are going to be swollen for quite a long time. But Steve Lenore, a meteorologist with me here, he probably has a little more detail in regards to the specific area and what threats there are.
Thanks, Tom. I've been trying to dig up more information on this. The Army Corps of Engineers has a nationwide network of river flood gauges where they track stream flow, and then when there's rain, it also measures that. And based on those reports, they then conduct a hydrologic forecast, which will determine how high the river might get. They take only not the rain that we've already had, but the expected rainfall, put all that in the watershed, and run their river model to forecast the crest. They do a pretty good job with that. The crest is the highest point at which a river will get during a flood. Unfortunately, Jacksonville does not have a flood gauge station. The nearest one is upriver, and that is in the area around, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, Chinquapin, which is on the Fear River, the northeast Fear River, upriver from them. And no, Jacksonville's on the New River, which doesn't have one of these gauges. However, we do know from looking at other reports that there has been significant flooding in the city. As far as we can tell, there's been no loss of life in Jacksonville. There have been numerous other areas where there's been some flash flood deaths, people making some poor choices, like getting electrocuted, hooking extension cords together in the rain and things like that. But as far as we know, Jacksonville's had some significant flooding, no loss of life that we know of, and the river crest there is not high enough to be indicated as a record on this particular interface that we have. But I do think they're looking at certainly some moderate flooding in the city and reports of water in buildings, things like that. As far as the weather currently, they're still getting some rain, but the real heavy rain has shifted away from them. So things are improving there.
Thank you, Jordan. And you're listening to meteorologist Tom Hale, meteorologist Steve Lenore, and you, the caller, on Red Eye Radio.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, here is meteorologist Tom Hale.
And along with me, meteorologist Steve Lenore. We're here to answer your questions, help you out in the storm, keep you ahead of the storm. Of course, in this case, you don't have to run all that fast. The storm's moving 6 miles an hour to the west.
That's right, Tom. I mean, a turtle with a couple of cups of coffee in it could do faster than this storm is doing. Hey, I want to clarify something very quickly that we talked about in our last segment with our caller concerned about Jacksonville. We know there has been some flooding there. You can find videos on the internet where there's like a foot of water here and there, and some cars were stuck in that. So there definitely has been some flooding. We're just not getting a lot of information right now from the National Weather Service or the flood control groups on precisely how bad it is. But we know for sure there's been considerable flooding there and in all of southeast North Carolina. In fact, looking at Fayetteville right now, which is another place with great concern for flooding, the Cape Fear River expected to be at 62 feet in a couple of days. It was at 12 feet a couple of days ago, so that's a pretty incredible rise of 50 feet. They're getting rain, about a half inch in the last hour, which is a moderately hard rain. If you were out driving in that, you'd have to slow down, but that's not helping things there any with more and more rain coming in. These spiral rain bands are continuing across the area, Tom, and in fact, the National Weather Service says there's still a chance of isolated tornadoes in these bands from Fayetteville down toward Wilmington generally. That's the risk area for that. That would include Lumberton as well. And we just see one wave after another of rain continuing coming ashore. Wilmington has had over 3 inches of rain since midnight, and it's just pouring.
Yeah, I've been looking at one of my favorite weather sites. It happens to be the College of DuPage. We'll give them a little bit of advertising. They're up in DuPage, Illinois, and they've got a really good weather site. And they've got two bands that are actually split bands starting to feed in, and then there's a kind of a coalescence of those two bands together as they come ashore just to the north of Wilmington, pretty close to the south side of where, you know, we saw Florence actually come ashore. And
Wrightsville
Beach. Wrightsville Beach.
Yep.
And so they're still getting hammered with heavy rain, but then that continues to stretch and move its way northward. And so it's heading up in the direction of New Bern. And so they're still getting some rain out of this.
And in Jacksonville, for that matter. But
yeah,
the big band you're referring to is arcing to the northwest. Just imagine a big smile in the sky, but it's upside down because it's a frown in this case. And it's arcing from Wilmington back to Fayetteville, where we're getting rainfall rates again in Fayetteville, which doesn't need any more rain. Half inch per hour, Tom, that's a respectable rainfall. It's not torrential, but it's definitely, like I said, if you were driving through a city and it was raining at a half inch per hour, it would be, you have your wipers on fast and it'd be ponding on the road.
Right, but this goes to the fact that we still have a very significant and large circulation.
It's huge considering the weakness of the, you hear 40 mile per hour winds, no big deal. But then you take into the fact that the circulation is 300 miles across and it's still strong enough to require a tornado watch to be in effect for the area around Wilmington and Fayetteville because we're getting enough shear in this system to produce that kind of energy.
Right. This just on the radar that I've got set up, the regional shot, this goes all the way up to the top of the Carolinas and just starts edging into Virginia. And you can see all of the bands. If you're looking at a radar, maybe you're using the My Radar app on your phone or one of your local television stations, weather apps, you can notice every single one of these storms has a curvature in it in the bands. And that's simply because that's all part of the giant circulation. While the wind's speed may be 40 miles an hour, the actual force that this area of low pressure has in relative to the entire country, this particular area is very broad.
One thing that's helping it, too, is what we call the upper-level outflow. What goes in must come out. So in a hurricane or a tropical cyclone, the air spirals in towards the low pressure at the bottom. It then rises to about 30,000 or 40,000 feet and rotates out clockwise at the top. So if you watch the Weather Channel or your local meteorologist very often when there's tropical weather, they may talk about this upper-level outflow. The outflow is so strong with Florence that's helping perpetuate the storm, even though it's been over land now for a day and a half. That's one of the reasons it's weakening so slowly. It's got this excellent outflow, kind of like a energy reserve, keeping the storm going longer than it would otherwise. So, you know, all these factors are really making it just that much more of an extraordinary flood event, Tom.
Well, and we were talking just a little bit ago with Steve Raleigh with the Charleston, South Carolina, and they were on the south side of the storm. And with that, you know, they were on the dry side of that circulation. But what he was noticing was, of course, and we do this too. When we're sitting at our radars and our equipment, our stations, we look at what's going on. And if there's nothing going in our area, we're looking at just up the road, whether in our neck of the woods, it would be we'd be looking at Oklahoma City, or we'd be looking at what's going on down in Dallas. We're stuck at KXII. It's our call letters. We're right on the Red River, right between the two big cities there. And we've got a lot of territory to look at, but there's not action going on all the time. And so in this situation, Steve was saying when he talked to us, he said, you know, there's some storms moving in with rotation.
Yep.
And point of fact, you can see three little cells right here that are just ready to go on shore. Each one of those looks to be cells that potentially could have some circulation. They're independent cells.
We had a confirmed tornado earlier northwest of Wilmington. It came in at Silver Lake. It crossed over the Cape Fear National Golf Course. As near as we can tell, there's been no reports of any damage with that. But it moved northwest about 35 miles an hour, and all these cells have been doing that. I want to give our folks in South Carolina a bit of comfort, and that is that if you're driving around in the state, we know that the southern half of the state is dry. From Columbia north, the rain is coming in, and you've got to watch out for that. Speaking of South Carolina, Tom.
Speaking of South Carolina?
Yeah.
Okay. You were speaking of South Carolina. I was... yeah.
Well, we had a call earlier. Oh. I guess I should have continued the
sentence. You should have prefaced that thought.
We had a call earlier from a gentleman driving on I-95 in South Carolina.
Yes, we did.
And he knew that I-95 had been closed in North Carolina, so he was going to detour through Columbia.
Right. He was going to take Charlotte. 26 up to 77 to get there.
And he wanted to know how the weather was going to be. And we told him, hey, there's going to be some rain, and it's going to be heavy at times, but we're not looking for severe flooding with this kind of deal.
Okay. Well, you know, in his situation, he was using his GPS, Steve. Now, that is a good thing and could be also a bad thing in this kind of situation.
Absolutely. Earlier, the North Carolina Department of Transportation had on their website a warning that there's so many roads flooded in North Carolina in the central and eastern part of the state. Don't trust your GPS to route you on a secondary route, because I don't know what it is. The technology is so good now, but you wind up on some back road or they'll take you out on a gravel road because it's a half mile shorter, and that can be very, very compromising to your safety with all the flooding we have.
Steve, I want to let you know that, folks, we have Kim McLeod. She is a spokesperson for, speaking of South Carolina, the Emergency Management Department.
Speaking of.
Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are y'all?
We're doing good. We haven't had enough coffee yet. We're not as punchy as we really could be. And when that happens, you'll know we start playing the song Turn Around, Don't Drown.
Well, Tom broke the coffee machine. I had to fix it. I'm just gonna throw him under the bus on that one.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. You know, I went an hour without being able to make that machine work.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Do you normally work all night?
Well, when we are at OutCon 1, we normally do. We're on 24/7 schedule right now, so... Yeah, we're working here. Some people are sleeping here.
Well, you need to clear up that one word, Alcon 1.
No, Opticon. Was it Opt-
oh, OpCon.
OpCon 1. Okay.
I think I saw that movie. It was straight to video, right?
Yeah.
Probably.
OpCon 1. Yes, we're getting there. Let's see. You have some statistics for us.
Just a few updates. We still have 55,000 power outages across the state, but that is way
down.
So the power companies have been doing an excellent job. So we're really excited that that they've been doing such a good job in getting people their power back on because of course running generators is very dangerous, and so we don't want anyone to accidentally die of carbon monoxide poisoning. So we're really trying to, get all that power back on that way so people are safe.
Cam, I have a question for you. I've been checking the Army Corps of Engineers hydrologic site where they do the forecast, crests and so forth, and I noticed that in Conway, South Carolina, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, the Waccamaw River? Is that right?
Waccamaw.
It's supposed to have a record crest of 17.9 feet on Tuesday. Can you comment on that at all? I mean, is that going to affect the town? Are we looking at flooded buildings? And when was the last time there was something of that level of flooding there?
Oh, I really can't speak to that, but I know that we're closely monitoring it, and so we're prepared for, the worst case scenario. But we're hoping that we're going to make it out of this with, very minimal flooding. We're hoping.
And are people sandbagging in the town? Is there any level of concern to that degree there?
We know that some people have gotten sandbags. There were some that were handed out by the county. So people seem to be preparing, and we're hoping that everyone is prepared and their homes are safe.
Okay, so that brings up my final question, and I'll throw it back to Tom. How do people that have evacuated learn of the all clear to come home? How is that done? Is there some organized way that's done from your end?
Well, we actually, the governor made an announcement earlier today, so I can find the press release.
You know what? When we are in this kind of a situation, we end up singing, yes, turn around, don't drown. No, we end up going to paper. I mean, we start pushing more paper than so forth, and so it's not look on our computer, it's shuffle and find that particular piece of paper where we made the note.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they're not going to be letting people in anytime soon, at least today or tomorrow. Well, maybe the southern part.
Well, Tom, while she's looking for that.
I have it. The evacuation order, the government master lifted the evacuation for Charleston, Dorchester, Berkeley, and Carlton counties, and the evacuation order is scheduled to be lifted today at 9 a.m. for Horry and Georgetown.
Okay.
Now, would that include Columbia, or is that still considered the danger area?
Oh, Columbia was never in a coastal evacuation zone. We're here in the Midlands.
Right. Well, I understand that, but I didn't know if they had evacuated the interior for flooding concerns also.
No, there haven't been any evacuation orders for flooding issued at this time. What we are telling people is that they should be watching out for, for flash flooding, and if waters look dangerous around where they live, then we're advising them to get to higher ground and don't wait for any emergency officials to tell you to leave.
Okay.
Very well.
I thought I heard something early on, and it was probably misinformation from the media, but the idea was that they were talking about evacuating 200 miles of the coastline. Do you recall something like that?
I heard that too.
Yeah.
I don't recall that.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything like that.
But
maybe they meant linearly along the coast,
along
and
the
not
coastline,
interior.
Inland and so forth. Yeah. And so let me ask you one last question here. Have you guys done any numbers on what the economic impact is going to be, especially when it comes to people who live paycheck to paycheck, week by week, that haven't been able to work for a week, that have evacuated?
Well, we would probably need to work with our partners at the Department of Commerce to get a report like that done.
Okay. But obviously, a lot of different areas have great jobs, but they're week-by-week hourly pay. And one of the concerns that I had was that this is going to have some significant financial impact, even on the people who didn't evacuate, but they haven't been able to work for a week. And so I don't know if there's a system in place for any of them to recover any of that that lost income that may put them in a very bad situation with all of their obligations.
Well, if anyone has any questions, they can always contact our PIPS line, our public information line, and that telephone number is 1-866-246-0133.
Okay, give that number again one more time slowly for us.
Okay, it's 1-866-246-0133.
Okay. All right, great.
So then, Kim, to just sort of reiterate this point, it typically, at least in your state, the governor is the one that makes the y'all come home announcement after an evacuation.
Yes, the governor does announce those.
Of course, he's probably advised by y'all that it's time to do it. Is that correct?
Well, it's a combination of a lot of different state agencies and the counties.
Okay. Very well.
Well, hey, thank you very much. And by the way, I want to let you know that you're going to want to get your earplugs ready, Kim, because I think we have a request to do some singing coming up very shortly. Special request by our listeners at WABC New York. Turn Around, Don't Down song.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
In G, I think.
Yeah, I believe it's in G. All right. You're listening to meteorologist Tom Hale, Steve Lenore on Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio with meteorologist Tom Hale, that's me, and meteorologist Steve Lenore.
That's
and
me.
What do you do when water is running across the road?
Water is flowing at the low water crossing. Turn around.
Turn around. Yeehaw. Everybody sing.
Don't risk your life. Don't do it. You might not make it through it. Turn around.
That'd be bad.
Uh-huh.
Turn around.
By take a little time and heed the warning signs. Turn around.
Turn around. Do not drown. Turn around. Let me tell you, we got Red Eye Radio, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.